As Jesus was fulfilling his ministry, we are told that he was preaching the gospel from city to city throughout his earthly ministry. One of the greatest examples of his sermons is found in what we now call the Sermon on the Mount, which covers Matthew chapters 5 through 7. At the end of that sermon, Jesus made a statement that is very important to those of us living today, because Jesus made it very clear that these words were spoken to be heard and to be acted upon. And that if we are acting upon them, in other words, if we read through the Sermon on the Mount, we read through the Beatitudes, and we look at all 8 of them, and we assess and check them off one by one. Yes, I've heard you, Jesus. Yes, I'm doing this. And then we move to the 6, you have heard that it was said to them of old, but I say unto you. And then as we continue through the sermon, it becomes a checklist in which these sayings of mine, first of all, we hear them. Secondly, we do them. If we are hearing them and doing them, then Jesus said we are just like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Because we know a flood is coming. Not a flood of water, but a flood of fire. A fire in which the heavens and the earth will be burned up. And our house will be burned up unless it is built on this rock. And that's what Jesus is describing here. Not our physical house, but the spiritual house that we are building for ourselves. On the other hand, if as we read through these points in the sermon, and we have to say to ourselves, I'm hearing them, but I'm still not doing them. I won't do them, or I can't do them, or I haven't learned how to do them, or whatever excuse we want to make, Jesus says, if you're not doing them, then you're like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. So it becomes a very simple matter, and I think it's something we should do, and maybe more than just once a year, and that is read through the Sermon on the Mount and make a personal assessment. How am I doing with this? How am I doing with these things that Jesus said, I will come face to face to again on the judgment day? On the judgment day, as Jesus said in John chapter 12 and verse 48, the judge will be the words I have spoken. There's not going to be anything unusual. There isn't going to be any tests given that we're not prepared for. He's already told us exactly what it is that he expects of us. And so each staying is like a single stone in our foundation. So we are building our foundation, our spiritual foundation, upon which we will stand before God and either hear, well done, good and faithful servant, or we will hear, you foolish and slothful and wicked servant. And it all is based on the stones in our foundation. The more stones we have, the more solid our foundation. The more gaps we have as we read through these things. Well, I'm not doing this, and I'm not doing this. Well, that's a gap. That's where the water can pour through. That's where you still have sand. And so each missing stone is weakening and threatening the whole. Now, so far in our in our series, we have looked at these points. And I just want to review them very quickly. Jesus said, blessed, which literally in the original language meant fortunate, highly favored, or honored. These were things that Jesus believed would make us very precious to God. These are things that Jesus stated would bring favor and honor and good fortune to us. So they are not things to overlook. And so as we look at these things, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. How do we see ourselves regarding the gospel of Jesus Christ? Are we the recipients of God's grace and God's wisdom and God's power? Or are we working with him and somehow we can contribute and we can add our own ideas to what he has given to us? And the answer is not a bit. We are poor. We have to beg. We have nothing to bring to God. We are dead in our trespasses and in our sins. We have nothing that God needs from us. All wisdom comes from him. All knowledge comes from him. Eternity comes from him. His lifestyle is an eternal lifestyle. Ours is a temporary one. We are transient here. We are here for 70, maybe 80 years is all we're going to be here. So we need to be poor in spirit, because if we are poor in spirit, the kingdom of heaven belongs to us. But if we start being proud and arrogant and adding our own ideas, then suddenly we will find ourselves cast out of the kingdom. Blessed are those who mourn over their sins. Paul said, godly sorrow produces repentance. How sorry are we when we sin? How bad do we feel about the things that we commit that our God reveals as evil and God reveals that Jesus had to die on the cross for? If Jesus had to die on the cross because I did these things, then I should feel I should be mourning over them, just like I would mourn over a mother or a father when they pass. And then there's the meek, those people who through strength are able to turn the other cheek. Those people who, because God has asked them to, not because they have to, not because they're weak, but because God has asked them to, just like Jesus, as he was mistreated, he was meek. He did not fight back. When he's reviled, he didn't revile again. He turned the other cheek. He went the second mile, and he's asked us to do the same thing. And then those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now, here's our first four stones. Would you say you have them? Are you meek? Are you poor in spirit? Are you mourning? Maybe you're saying, the first time I've ever heard of these things, I don't even know what they are. Well, if you haven't even heard them then you certainly have not yet started laying your foundation. And Peter said this, and I really like his statement here. If these things are yours and abound, they make you to be. That's how he put it when he talked about the eight things we add to our, or seven things we add to our faith. That if these things belong to you, and they abound, in other words, you're doing them, then they themselves appoint you to become. So these things appoint us to being in the kingdom, to being comforted, to inheriting the earth, and to being filled. This morning, we want to look at the merciful. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 7, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Would you say you're a merciful person? What does that mean to us? Do we show mercy in our home? Do we show mercy when we're driving in the car? Do we show mercy in our workplace? Do we show mercy in the church? We seek for mercy. We want God to be merciful to us. But if we want to obtain mercy, Jesus said, we have to be merciful. So this is a mighty stone in our foundation. I want God to be merciful to me. And the mercy that I receive from God will be directly related to the mercy that I give. James will say it. This will be our very last slide. But James says, judgment is without mercy to those who showed no mercy. So mercy is my ability to change God's demeanor toward me. The more acts of mercy I show, the more mercy will be shown to me on the judgment day. The harsher I am, the more contemptuous I am of other people, the more dismissive I am, the less that I care about the needs of other people. When I stand before God, that's how God will treat me. If you want God to treat you the way you treated that person on the road last time you treated someone badly on the road, or the way you treated your family member the last time they made a mistake, and instead of showing mercy, you were harsh and cruel and rude and obnoxious to them. Is that how you want God to treat you on the judgment day? Do you want God to treat you the way you treat the people around you who cause you problems, who sin against you, who make inconveniences to you? We have done many of these things to God. We have made things very inconvenient from God from time to time. Sometimes his name is blasphemed because of things that we do. Sometimes his plans, well laid, are damaged or destroyed, like Saul did to him, or like others have done to him, Nadab and Abihu did to him, and God had to strike them dead. How do we want God to treat us? Well, there's a standard definition of mercy. So let's take a look at the standard definition of mercy. And that is, it is kindness or goodwill toward the miserable and afflicted, joined with a desire to relieve them. Now, generally speaking, we put this on a physical level. This is the poor. This is the people who have problems in this life. and our desire to alleviate their circumstances. But in the spiritual realm, it also works because the scriptures also teach that we are miserable and afflicted in our relationship with God. The wages of sin is death. These are not things that we have any control over. Before God ever created the heavens and the earth, when angels sinned, they were immediately cast down to chains of darkness. Sin is a terrible thing. The wages of sin, a single sin, is death. And so the misery of the life of people who have sinned, and yet God has kindness and goodwill toward them. So the basic idea is, first of all, feelings of tender compassion and pity. And second, the desire to relieve them. So that's what makes up mercy. Are you a merciful person? When you see people with problems, do you feel sorry for them? Or are you apathetic? You don't care? Do we feel contempt? It's their fault. They're the ones who brought this on themselves. And so why should I get involved? There's no pity there. There's no tender mercy there. Without pity, compassion, empathy, and sympathy, there can be no mercy. If I want God to have tender sympathy and compassion and mercy and pity to me on the judgment day, I've got to offer it now. If I don't have any pity, if I don't have any compassion, if I don't have any care and concern for the plight of other people, then that's exactly how God is going to treat me. Now, that's a pretty serious opportunity, and it's also a pretty serious threat. It's an opportunity because I can dial up God's mercy. I can make it louder and louder and louder. How? By becoming more merciful myself. By learning that by my feelings of pity and compassion toward the problems of other people, and being patient and kind and compassionate with them in those struggles, then I know that on the judgment day, that's how God's going to treat me. Now, that's a pretty cheap reason to do it, but it's one of the reasons the Lord gives. I think there's a more important reason to do it, and that's because that's how God is. And I want to be like God. But if that's not enough for us, then that's what the Lord wants us to understand. And so there's no mercy unless we have. Now, there's a much more important definition, though, and that is that the Greek word for mercy is a pathos. Now, I'm giving you a reason for giving you this Greek word pathos, because it's come into our language with the word passion, with the word sympathy, the pathy, sympathy, empathy, apathy are all three terms that describe the pathos, which is a strong emotion. Let's face it, when my mother dies, I have strong emotions. When your mother dies, I don't have those strong emotions unless I'm going to feel sympathy towards you. In other words, your passion is now my passion. That's what the Good Samaritan did. When the Good Samaritan saw the man beaten and left for dead, he felt that same passion that the poor man felt. In other words, he empathized with him. He felt sorry for him. He sympathized with him. He allowed the circumstances and the events that caused him a problem. I know exactly how he feels. You know, really, it comes back to righteousness. Righteousness means I know what's fair, and I'm going to treat you fairly. And I know what's mine, so I know what's yours, and I'm not going to take what's yours. So righteousness is don't steal, don't covet, don't commit adultery, don't murder. Why? Don't bear false witness, because I'm taking something that's yours. And I wouldn't like it if you took that from me, so I don't want to take it from you. In other words, I can feel your feelings. That's the difference between a merciful person and an unmerciful person. That's the difference between a sympathetic person and an empathetic person. An empathetic person is somebody who feels your pain. I feel your pain, sometimes people will say. And if they really mean that, then that's the first step toward mercy. But then something else has to happen as well. But let's keep the emotion roused by contact with an affliction which comes undeservedly on someone else. Now, I would challenge him on that because I think that the emotion can also be aroused even if they deserve it. Sometimes people do foolish things and they deserve what they're receiving. But that doesn't mean I can't feel sorry for them. We deserve to go to hell. We deserve to be punished for our sins. But God still feels sorry for us. And that's kind of the direction that we want to look as we go here. But let me just talk about these three terms real quickly. Apathy means I don't care. I can't feel your pain. I don't care what happens to you. It doesn't bother me because it has no impact on me. And the further away you are from my life, the less I could care about you. So those people driving down the road, they're just a bunch of ants. They don't mean anything to me. And if they get in my way, it's just irritating to me. And that's apathy. And I'm speaking facetiously right now. I'm not saying that's how I actually feel, but I'm just saying that's how this person is. They don't care. That's what a mass murderer is. They don't feel the pain of their victims. If they did, they couldn't do it. You and I could not treat people like that because we would feel sorry for them. And it would keep us from being able to act in ways like that. But there are people out there who don't have any of those feelings. And that's an apathetic person. A sympathetic person is somebody who feels with. And so I feel along with you. I've lost my mom, so I know how you feel. Now, if I haven't lost my mom and I say I know how you feel, then that's a little bit of a stretch because oftentimes you can guess how bad it is. But unless you've actually gone through the process and felt the pain, you can't really fully understand and be fully sympathetic and empathetic. So in Hebrews 4, we see it all tied together. We do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. He feels our pain. He was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Now, that would give him the right to look down on us. That would give him the right to be cynical or contemptuous. What's the matter with you people? Can't you get it together? Can't you do anything right? Now, there's a lot of bosses who act like that, but not Jesus. Jesus has mercy. And if your boss has mercy, when you make a terrible mistake, you don't want to go in and tell him because you know it'll hurt him, but you're not really afraid because you know that he will feel sorry for you and he will feel bad for you because you did this. And he will feel almost as bad that you did it because of the pain you're going through. That's the kind of boss I want anyway. Isn't that the kind of boss you want? Somebody who has empathy and sympathy? Somebody who says, I know exactly how you feel. I've done similar things in my life. And I feel sorry for you. And therefore, I'm going to help you out of this situation. I'm not going to condemn you. I'm not going to mock you. I'm not going to scorn you. I'm not going to punish you. So we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. Verse 16, let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now, I say this passage has it all because there were the three things, or two things actually, that have to do with mercy. One is feelings of tender pity and compassion and sympathy and empathy, and two is a desire to help. Well, we have the word mercy, and we also have the word grace, which means the gifts that we don't deserve that will be given to us. So we have the empathy and the sympathy in verse 15. We have the mercy, verse 16, and we have the gifts that are necessary, also in verse 16. Now, that's what mercy is. And that's what God, when Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, that's what he wants from us. He wants sympathy. He wants empathy. He doesn't want us to go through life apathetic. He doesn't want us to go through life not caring about the needs of other people. And sometimes that's a challenge. Some people have more empathy than others. Some people have a
great deal of sympathy and empathy toward other people. They feel sorry for them. For some people, it's so strong that they almost can't handle life, because every time they read about the people's other people's problems, they get so worked up over it that it maybe takes them a while to get over it. And of course, those people, they have to temper their sympathy and empathy, but those people at least have a good starting point. It's better to have too much and work with it than it is to not have enough. Because if you don't have enough, you will never have the mercy of God, and therefore you will never receive that mercy from God. So there's sympathy that will help. There's mercy that will find grace to help in time of need. So the Good Samaritan is a classic example of mercy. While the Levite and the priest just look the other way. They didn't care. I mean, they should have felt empathy. They should have felt sympathy, but they didn't. They just looked the other way and walked on. But the Good Samaritan, when he saw him, he had compassion. Now, there's a word we haven't talked about yet, but there's the word passion, and calm is the Latin word for with. So, feeling strongly with. The man saw the man beat half to death, and he put himself in his place, and he said to himself, I've got to do something. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal, and he walked. And then finally he brought him to the inn and took care of him. And then when he left, he gave 2 days' pay and said, if he needs anything else, take care of him. And if he spends more, well, I'll take care of that when I come back. That's the kind of mercy that Jesus wants us to have. But then there's the prodigal son. The father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. But the brother didn't care. The brother said, why would you waste your money on that worthless wretch who spent all your money with harlots? And here was the man's answer. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and found. He had compassion. He put himself in the son's position. And he said, I feel so bad for you. I wish you hadn't done these things, because I know how terrible you feel now, and I wish there was something I could do, and so I'm going to restore you as much as I can to your former position. But not the brother. Brother had no compassion. The brother had no sympathy. The brother had no mercy. Now, I believe this could be the plank. I really think this is probably the plank that Jesus is talking about, is mercy. Let's see what he says. Judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank which is from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. What do you think Jesus is talking about here? What do you think this plank is that keeps me from seeing clearly? I think it's a lack of empathy and a lack of sympathy that causes me to look down and pass harsh judgment on the sins of other people, but to give myself a pass. My sins are normal. I don't know where we get this idea. My sins are normal. And anybody who has my sins and my weaknesses, I really feel sorry for. But if you don't have my sins, I don't understand your weaknesses. Your weaknesses make no sense to me. Your weaknesses are disgusting. They're vile. They're just despicable. They make me sick. I can't even stand to look at you. You shouldn't even be alive. People like you shouldn't even exist. Now, that's what the apathetic person will say. And that's how, and the reason I'm talking like this is because that's exactly how the scribes and the Pharisees were. You remember that Pharisee who got up and said, I'm thankful that I'm not like everyone else, this adulterers and fornicators and extortioners and that miserable publican over there. And then Jesus says, the miserable publican over there wouldn't even raise his eyes to heaven, but said, Father, be merciful to me, a sinner. And Jesus said, what? The publican went home justified. But the Pharisee with the plank in his eye couldn't see himself clearly. God didn't even forgive him of his sin. He couldn't see clearly. He was actually worse than the publican, but he couldn't see it. Because his sins were normal. Everybody had his sins, and everybody who had his sins were all in the same club. Pride, arrogance, greed. That's what these political people in the time of Christ, that's what they all had. And they looked down on the adulterers and the tax collectors and the wicked people. They saw them in a lower limb. They couldn't gender any mercy. They couldn't gender any pity or any sympathy. And this is the way, this is our struggle. We can easily look down on other people's weaknesses when there are strengths. If I have a strength, I don't see very clearly your weakness. So if I'm punctual, I don't understand you people who can't be punctual. If I say I'm going to do something and I do it, I don't understand you people who say you're going to do something and then you don't do it. If I am a good driver, I don't understand people who don't know how to drive well. They shouldn't be on the roads. And so we pass these harsh judgments on other people. Those are planks, brethren, that need to be removed because there's no place for them. Jesus was without sin, and yet he has compassion to us because he can understand why, with the circumstances and events that we pass through to get where we are, he understands why we are the way we are. And you could understand that about me, and I could understand that about you if we just take the time to get to know each other. If we just take the time to become empathetic and sympathetic and to care. And so blessed are the merciful is a big sandwich to swallow. If we want to have mercy, we're going to have to leave apathy and contempt and grow in sympathy and empathy. That's probably the biggest problem most of us face with mercy. It's easy to show mercy when you feel sorry for people. When you have empathy for them, when you have compassion for them, when you understand what they're going through. It's easy. And for most of us, again, we're very merciful for the things we understand. It's the things we don't understand. It's the things that are different from us. That's where we get the planks that cause us to be unable to see clearly. And so you may be even more godly than me, but I can't see it because of the plank in my eye. Because your weakness is foreign to me and I don't understand it and I can't accept it and I just feel contempt toward it. And that's the plank that the Pharisees had toward Jesus. That's the plank that the Pharisees had to that woman taken in adultery. They didn't care about that woman taken in adultery. They only wanted to use her to destroy Jesus. They didn't care about her at all. He cared about her. And that was the difference. And he told her, don't sin anymore. He didn't give her a pass. But he showed mercy.
Excuse me.
They didn't. They brought her and shamed her and used her in a despicable way. And they must have left a terrible taste in her mouth, especially when they left the man and just brought her. Because they were both taken in the act, it says. But why didn't they bring the man? There was some serious planks going on in that situation. If Jesus could be without sin and feel empathy and sympathy, then there's no excuse for us. Maybe I don't understand homosexuals. Maybe I don't understand mass murderers. Maybe I don't understand kidnappers or adulterers. Maybe I don't understand things like that because those are things that I've never done and I'm not interested in. But I can still feel sorry for them because I have my own weaknesses, and if I just take my weakness and say, you know, he feels the same way toward that as I do toward this, and he's struggling with that as I am toward this, and suddenly the plank goes away and I can see clearly. And suddenly, now we can reason, and I can talk to him, and I can say, you know, I really feel sorry for you. And let me show you the scriptures that can help you with this, and you're going to have to fight this battle each step of the way, but you can do it. And so we have to be able to do that because of the golden rule. So the key to mercy, and if Hebrews 5 says this, he can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray since he himself
is also subject to weakness.
It's critical, brethren. The next time you have a harsh thing to say to someone, a harsh judgment that you're going to pass, and maybe you're not going to say it to them, you're going to say it about them to someone else, or you're just going to think it. But it comes from contempt, it comes from apathy, it comes from no mercy, no compassion, no empathy, no sympathy. Why? Because I'm not making the application. The application is very simple. I have my weaknesses, and you have your weaknesses. And they're different, but they're the same. Because there has no temptation that anyone has been tempted with that is not common to man. In other words, there is nothing that is beyond the pale. The Pharisee who said, "I'm not like these people," was wrong. He was just like them. He was just like them because we're all sinners. And that's what the Hebrew, or that's what Paul said in Romans chapter 2. If you commit adultery, then you're no different than the idolater or the murderer or the blasphemer. It's just a different sin. And so he himself is subject to weakness. We've got to make that application. I'm no different than anyone else. I'm no better than anyone else. I'm no worse than anyone else. Now, Paul called himself the chief of sinners, but not in the sense of making himself, I'm worse than everyone else, but just to show that there's no limit to God's mercy and God's grace to people. So, the situation comes back to what we talked about with righteousness. That's mine. Well, if it's mine, then you have yours. And if you take what I have that's mine, I don't like it. So if I take what's yours, you're not going to like it. I mean, that's simple. That's simple, basic, what you need to learn as a person to get along in life. When what's mine, I want. I don't want you taking it. If you take it, that's unrighteous. So, if it's my toy and you steal it, if it's my wife, if it's my life, if it's my possessions and you steal it, if it's my good name and you bear false witness, that's mine. Well, if I understand that's mine, then I understand that's yours. And that's not fair. If I understand what's not fair to me, then I need to learn what's not fair to you. And I need to not take what belongs to you. Just add sympathy and empathy, and we can resolve it. So mercy is founded on the ability to see that everybody's like me, regardless of their weakness. And I can quickly become sympathetic and empathetic by understanding. It's the first time I hear of somebody's sin, and oftentimes I just shake my head, I'll get sick, I'll get disgusted, I'll get irritated, but then I'll sit myself down, and I'll remember that verse in chapter 5 there of Hebrews, and that is, I've got to have compassion because I'm subject to weakness too. I can't be a hypocrite. God would see me with the biggest plank in my eye if I can't see that his weakness is exactly like my weakness. Brethren, every time we feel contempt towards someone for something that they've done, we are manifesting a lack of mercy. We are manifesting a lack of understanding that we are not a judge. We are all in the same world, and we're all struggling with the same sins and the same weaknesses, even though they're different. I think you understand now what I mean by that. Just because your sins are not my sins doesn't mean that I can't understand you. So in James chapter 2 and verse 13, judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Let's go back to that woman caught in the act of adultery. They drug her to Jesus so that they could use her. They didn't care about her soul. There was other ways to handle what they did. Jesus wasn't even a judge. They had no business taking that woman to her. He had nothing to do with it. He wasn't a witness. He hadn't seen anything. There was no way. She was just a tool to them. They didn't care about her at all.
There was no mercy at all in the hearts of those people because they did not understand her plight. They did not put themselves into her shoes. There was no mercy. And Jesus has made it very clear, if you want mercy, you have to show mercy. So what about us? Are we merciful in the way we treat our fellow men? Like I say, on the job, in the home, in school, in the church, on the road, in commerce, in our dealings with our friends and neighbors. Are we merciful? Are we compassionate? Is our first choice understanding and sympathy and empathy and pity and a desire to understand and then a desire to help? Is that our initial response? Or is our initial response apathy, contempt, disgust, harsh judgments, a plank that keeps us from even seeing that that person is just like me, and I need to feel sorry for him, and I need to want to help him, just like the Good Samaritan did in his situation? So judgment is without mercy to those who have shown no mercy. So what about that foundation stone? Would you say you have that foundation stone? Is this in our... Are we hearing these words and doing them? Are we the wise man who's building his house on the rock? Or have we heard this sermon before and made up our mind then, I need to make some serious changes, but I haven't yet? Or perhaps we're saying to ourselves, I've come a long way on this one. I still have a ways to go, but I'm coming along. I'm moving along. Judge not that you be not judged. Now, Jesus is not saying, obviously, that we shouldn't pass judgment, but he's looking at the criteria for our passing judgment. There's a very different judgment that the Pharisee passed on that publican in Luke 18 than the judgment that Jesus passed on the world when he so loved the world that he gave his life for us. A very different assessment. The kind of assessment that that publican was given by that Pharisee is what Jesus is talking about here. So remember this, the way you judge, you're going to be judged. If you're harsh, if you're contemptuous, if you're apathetic, if you don't care, then just expect that that's exactly how God's going to look at you when you come into the room. You know, when we violate a law and we have a court date with a judge, and we're put in a position. I got to go before this judge. I have no idea what kind of judge this is going to be. But I know what I'm praying for. I'm praying for a merciful one. I'm praying for a sympathetic one. I'm praying for a compassionate one who will understand, because I want to go in there and plead my case. Judge, here's what happened. If the judge starts out, I could care less what you're going to say. I hear stories like yours every day. I know you're guilty, and I'm just going to punish you. My heart goes down to my toes. Because I don't have a chance. This guy has the authority. Well, when I go before God on the judgment day, I can dial that up. I can have that kind of a judge if that's the kind of judge I am. If I've got that plank in my eye and everybody's a jerk and everybody's stupid and everybody's an idiot and nobody deserves any compassion or mercy and I never am understanding or compassionate, you just count on it. When you go before God, with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. So judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. So mercy on the roads. Road rage would disappear if we just had more mercy, if we just had more understanding people who could put themselves and say, you know, that guy just made a serious blunder, but I've made blunders, and I feel sorry for him. Now, we don't hear that very often. And we don't think that very often. But that's the right way to approach it. And I'll guarantee it's a whole lot easier to turn the other cheek and go the second mile and be defrauded if you start with empathy and sympathy than it is if you're already contemptuous and you're already disgusted and apathetic. You can't do it. And so if you find yourself never able to turn the other cheek, I can tell you where the problem is. You aren't making the application that your weaknesses are different, but the same. And what that person just did, you could have done. How's it put there, but for God's grace, I might have gone?
And so these are things for us to give serious consideration to, because they are a very important stone in our foundation. So let me just read this last verse, and then the lesson will be yours. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so also you must do. But Lord, don't you understand? My sins are normal. How could you expect me to forgive him for what he just did to me? And the Lord's looking at me going, what is the matter with you? They're the same. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And so mercy is very introspective. It starts with one point. Do you care about other people? Do you care about their souls? Do you care about their needs? Are you willing to spend and be spent for their souls, as Paul said? Are we willing to, why not rather be defrauded? Why not rather accept wrong? And are we willing, like Paul said in Romans 14 or 15, that we that are strong ought to bear with the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves? And so mercy is a critical stone because it affects so many other things. It affects our evangelistic abilities. It affects our bearing one another's burdens and so fulfilling the law of Christ abilities. And it certainly affects our abilities, our reputation for forbearance and our reputation for kindness and compassion. Because when we're confronted with a serious problem, our initial response is us. You can't hide that. If you're irked, if you get that scowl, if you get that look in your eye, if you start yelling and you start berating, they know. You don't care about it. This person doesn't care about me. This person doesn't have any mercy or compassion. And a lot of us have to struggle with that. And so as we now pick up the song of encouragement, it's time for us to make a mental assessment of what we need to do with this information. Do we need to make any changes? This is a sermon. It's an opportunity for you to lay another foundation stone, or an opportunity for you just to go out tomorrow and forget, and it's as though this sermon never happened. So what is the step? That's the name of our song, number 319, Only a Step. Is there a step that needs to be taken today? Does someone need to come forward? Do you finally need to obey the gospel? Have you not yet done it? Is there an opportunity here for you to make a change? Is there someone you need to go talk to? Remember what Jesus said, if your brother has aught against you, go show him his fault before you bring or be reconciled to your brother. Either way, only a step. As we sing this song, we all need to be thinking about what steps do I need to take? And if we can help you in any way, we would like you to take that step forward while we together stand and sing.